It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 265. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I break down the awesome college football playoff championship game, and then we predict this week's NFL playoffs. Then it's on to BYU Hoops. Just how awesome is Eric Mika, and have we seen his ceiling yet? And then, what must the Cougars do later in the season in order to beat a team like St. Mary's or Gonzaga? Also on the show, we discuss exactly why Rogue One is such an awesome movie. So there will be some movie spoilers at the end of this podcast, but we saved it till the end. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. On Twitter at BYU_RiseAndShout. And listen to Matt and I yap right now. CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, people are talking. People are talking. Do you know what they're talking about?
But are you thinking about?
Do you know what they're talking about, Matt?
That's a funny commercial, by the way.
That is a funny commercial.
I don't know what they're talking about. What are they talking about, Adam?
They are curious because we broke some news that was very little known last week on the podcast.
And when we break news, it's truly broken.
Oh, it's smashed to pieces. Most people listening to the podcast last week did not realize that the LDS Church had sent missionaries to the Klingon Empire.
Well, you know, it's one of those where you get your you get your mission call, you open it up, and it just has a phone number for you to call.
Right, right.
You know, I'm sure everybody's heard about it. And you call, and then you're then informed that you're being sent by Starship.
By Starship, yes, to the Klingon Empire, and it's we might have to talk to Don about that. I know it was a lot of rough experiences. I mean, you served in Ukraine, big deal. He served in a hostile empire. You know, many light years away. So
I think they have to teach you combat on your way in. But it comes in really handy, like during the Olympics. So when there were Klingons that came to the Salt Lake Olympics, there were people there who spoke their language.
Yeah, it was great. It was really nice. It was really nice. Yeah,
they appreciated that.
Now, my geek card was put under question because of my misspelling of Lieutenant Worf.
Yeah, I would have spelled it WHARF. So, I mean, I'm not the right guy. Not the right guy for that.
Well, luckily, Sweeney and a few others helped correct us on that. Matt, I mean, coming up,
the Wharf is where we watch the fireworks on New Year's Eve in Boston.
That's right. Remember that? 1999.
Oh, that was the best.
That was the best. We had a good
hilarious.
You, me, and Sam. It was just the three of us, right?
Yep.
Just the three of us that night.
The three best friends that anybody could ever have.
Oh my gosh, stop. Stop. That was
ever,
the worst
ever,
thing.
Ever.
I can't believe you're still doing it. That's the worst thing you've done on this podcast. 6 years, and you have just topped your worst by singing that song. And you always get uncomfortable when I sing, and here you go, singing a truly disturbing song.
One of the funniest songs ever written.
Probably.
The Lone Wolf Rides Alone.
It can be disturbing and funny, right? Those are not mutually exclusive.
They often come hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah, they most certainly do. Matt, we had mentioned doing a Jamal Williams show this week. That is going to be next week. We have a special guest to be on the podcast to talk about Jamal, and that will be next week. I will announce who the guest is as soon as I for sure have the interview. I'll have the interview hopefully in the next couple of days. We're recording this on Tuesday night. Also, we're going to talk here in a minute about men's hoops. We're going to talk about college football really, really quick here as our open. And then, of course, we're going to talk about Rogue One, Matt, later in this episode. We're going to kind of explore Rogue One, what we liked, what we didn't, and it's going to be spoiler-filled. We will give you a fair warning before that segment that you may need to turn off the podcast if you are worried about Rogue One spoilers. If you just aren't interested, my question would be why?
What's wrong with you? Even I'm into Rogue One.
You're buying Star Wars books now, you big geek.
Not only am I buying them, I'm reading them.
You're reading them. You're a big, big geek. You're a big geek.
I don't know why I have to keep saying big. I just, I consider myself average size.
Yes, well, I mean, I are you going to wear like a Star Wars, when your next half marathon, like running like a Star Wars costume?
I don't run races in costume.
You should.
Negative.
That would. Leads, I think you're going to.
Often leads to chafing, so I'm going to pass.
Okay, maybe a 10K. All right. So, Matt, let's start off talking about, we're going to open tonight with the college football playoff championship game, which happened, was going on 24 hours ago. And Matt, I have to say, we both picked Alabama to win, right? Last week on the show, though both of us thought it would be a close game and an entertaining game. And it certainly did that. Matt, at what point when watching that game did you think to yourself, this may be one of the best college football games I've ever watched?
When I think it was when, was it 21-28 and Clemson had just got the ball?
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that they were going to make this a game. Yes. They had that this may make it down to the wire. That was when the
24-21, I think, is what the score.
Okay, yeah, 24-21. Yeah, and that's when the USC Texas game and some other really good games started to pop into my head. Like, we may be watching another classic here, which was really good because there were points earlier in that game where I thought, I'm not even going to stay up and watch this whole.
Well, I thought when I turned to my wife after the fumble, when they're up, are they up 14-0 when that second fumble happened?
Yeah,
and it looked like they're going to be down 21-0, right? And the defense makes a big stop, but as soon as that fumble happened, I said to Kathleen, "This is over. This is done." I mean, Bama's defense is just too good. And their offense will score enough towards the end of the game. How big, in retrospect, was that tackle by whatever that number 13 wide receiver who also ended up catching the touchdown pass at the end? How big was that tackle on that fumble recovery? Because that guy was walking into the end zone. All of a sudden, it's 21-0 instead of 17-14. I mean, 17-0. I mean.
You're up against one of the best defenses in the country, down three touchdowns?
Down three touchdowns. Ugh. Granted, you have a tremendous offense and a tremendous quarterback, but still, that's a...
Maybe the best quarterback in the country.
Do we feel silly that he doesn't have a Heisman now?
I think you do. Do you have to.
I feel silly that he does. I feel like this is like when Marshall Faulk graduated and hadn't won a Heisman.
Well, you go back the past couple of years. I don't know how Stanford didn't walk away with one. What's it, McCaffrey?
McCaffrey, yep.
And Deshaun Watson.
Watson, they had great performance by the offensive line, picking up some key blitzes. Though some of those blitzes, I watched this, and obviously Alabama has way better players than BYU. I'm not saying that, but sometimes I watch this and I go, why can't we ever get a free rusher to the quarterback the last couple seasons? Like, don't you just have to send six? Right? It seems like even when we send five, everybody gets blocked. Like, nobody even gets, I don't know. But some of those blitzes, Watson had absolutely no chance, right? I mean, absolutely no chance. And it would have been 21-7, not 21-0. But still, 21-7 in the second half, that would have been a pretty big deficit to overcome. Matt, let me ask you this question. When Alabama scored and they go up 31-28, okay, did you in your head with 2 minutes left, was there any doubt in your mind that Clemson was gonna at least tie it? I mean, were you thinking, was like air out of the balloon completely at that point? Or were you thinking, no, Watson's got this. He's at least going to get him a field goal try.
When they first got the ball on that drive?
Yeah.
No, I thought, well, they've got a chance here to do something. But I was not sold on, well, they'll at least get the field goal in and we're going to OT. I was not there.
I turned to my wife, who was not there and asleep, and said, Watson's going to win this game. It was just like one of those things, like, there's 2 minutes left. They left too much time on the clock. Then, of course, the drive starts, and I thought their clock management was terrible. But I guess when you score with 1 second left, who am I to judge?
It only gets better if you score with no seconds left.
Yes, yes. So Matt, the big question on this game is, of course, Saban is probably still very upset about the pick plays, the two pick plays.
Yeah, if there's one play that bothered him, he would probably pick that one.
Oh, look what you did there. Matt, the second play is absolutely not a foul. It's not a foul. It is a guy running a route, and the other he basically gets picked by his own guy.
Yeah.
There was no contact. The first one, I don't think it's a foul. I think that just like in basketball, you've just got to learn how to defend those plays better, right? You just have to switch. Now, I know some teams do that. Alabama apparently does not. But sometimes,
well, apparently Alabama goes with the tackle the other receiver in the end zone
approach. Yeah. That's what they do for sure. So
I mean, he wrapped him up like a Christmas present. I mean, like, it was full on, like, I'm going to hug this guy like I haven't seen him in 5 years. I mean, it was like I don't know what you have to whine about when you're Alabama in that situation. You just got to defend it better.
And then in the end, your defense, as good as they've been all year, and as good as they were at parts of this game, just basically disappeared in the fourth quarter.
They gave up 21 points in the fourth quarter. You don't go in and say, "Oh, they won because this pick play was cheap." No, they won because you gave up. You had no answer for Deshaun Watson in the fourth quarter.
Yes, and that last pass
scored
interference
over 30 points.
That last pass interference was a pass interference too.
Yes,
I mean, you may have seen my tweet about Bama fans. It got retweeted many times from the Rise and Shut account. They look so forlorn. They just won a national championship last year. Like, come on, guys. Like, I don't expect them to be happy and clapping at the end, but don't look like your world just ended, right? Like, and you're probably going to be in this game next year, right? So, are you taking the field or Alabama as far as making the college football playoff next year?
With a freshman this year, getting there with a freshman quarterback, I mean, and this backup running back that looks pretty good, they're going. They'll be back.
They'll be back. So what other three teams do you think you'll see there next year? Way too early to say, but we're going to do it anyway. We do this all the time.
Michigan.
I was going to say Michigan, too. I don't think Ohio State.
Nope.
I think Michigan will be there. What about Florida State?
Florida State's a definite possibility.
I don't think so. I don't like Florida State. Not that much. I don't think they'll be back. I think USC is the fashionable pick. But you know, you can't drop a bunch of games at the beginning and look terrible and then look great and be considered a great team. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know they had a freshman quarterback that didn't play in some of those games. But in the end, they lost those games and they count. So they're going to have to prove it to me early next year. But the cool, crazy thing, Matt, is Alabama and Florida State start off against each other.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So somebody was saying that's the national championship playoff game. No, it's not. Either of those teams could still make the playoff easily.
Yep.
Even after
if the loser of that game wins out and wins their conference, they're going to still go.
Yeah, they're still going. Easy, easy. I mean, there's scenarios where the winner doesn't get in, right? Like if they end up dropping two more games after that, right? The committee has shown that they love good losses, Matt. They love them. They love them. The committee loves it. Matt, let's talk about the ratings. They stunk, okay, for the college football playoff, a little bit better than last year. The powers that be are still defending the completely stupid idea of having these games on New Year's Eve. Matt, any chance you think after 2 years of mediocre ratings after that first year was such good ratings that they make some changes to the future schedules, or do you think These guys are dumb enough to just keep riding that horse into the ditch.
I think they make a change. If the Big 12 was in charge, I'd go with the end of the ditch option. But I think there's enough smart people around the table that they figure something out here. And I don't know what they do, but you're gonna have to sit the Rose Bowl down and have a conversation with them and bring them back to reality. But
so the Rose Bowl can still be on that day.
There's too much money on the line. They're leaving way too much money on the table.
Put the Rose Bowl in the morning. Or heck, put one of the playoff games earlier. I don't care. You could still have the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. Figure it out. But if I'm ESPN, I'm turning to the powers that be and say, okay, you got to fix this and fix it next year. Just fix it. We want them on New Year's Day. It makes sense on New Year's Day. Casual fans are not going to give up their New Year's Eve plans to watch football. They're not.
Even hard for some real serious fans. Like, yeah. if you're a man, or a woman, but if you're married and your spouse
is into
it,
yes. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
If you're married and your spouse isn't into it, and you've got an invitation to go out, you're going out.
Yes. Yes. And this year we got an invitation from one of my friends who wanted to watch football. You know what I mean? Like, that was the best.
Worlds right there.
That's the best. That's what it all comes down to right there. So, Matt, let's move on from that and go to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, let's start off with men's volleyball. They swept number 6 Lewis on Friday, but then lost to number 11 Loyola Chicago 3-1 on Saturday. I'd say still a good start to the season. I think a split over this weekend was not a terrible result. Obviously, they wanted to come out of there undefeated, but doesn't really affect how I feel about the team going forward. How about you?
Well, and with the team, with this team, it's not like this knocks them out of contention to compete important things down the road, right? Especially when you look at you're losing to ranked teams and stuff like that. So, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't hurt their chances for things. There's nothing to freak out about.
Nothing to freak out. They're coming. They play this weekend. McKendree and Concordia Irvine. Matt, I've never heard of either of those schools, but apparently they do exist.
I've actually heard of McKendree, and it's kind of a long story.
Then let's not tell it.
But, Concordia Irvine, I know nothing about.
Yeah, I don't know any about those. Matt, women's basketball is playing that mirror schedule to men's basketball. So they were at Pacific and then home against St. Mary's, right?
That sounds right.
They beat both of those teams to improve to 9-6. Senior Mackenzie Pulsifer in the Pacific went over 1,000 points for her career. She's averaging nearly 13 points a game this season. They've got coming up at San Francisco and then Saturday night home against San Diego. Matt, obviously the NFL playoffs happened this weekend. We'll talk about that here in a moment. Ziggy looked like his old self. 2 sacks, unfortunately. Their team wasn't very good that day, other than Ziggy. But he looked really good.
That day or any other playoff game since, I don't know.
The 50s, I think, was their last playoff win. I think is what they showed on the graphics over and over again during that game. Obviously, Kyle Van Noy got the week off with the Patriots on a bye. And then, of course, we're going to see, Kyle Van Noy, Daniel Sorensen get a chance this weekend, Matt. We did not predict the NFL playoffs, Matt. Okay?
There's nothing to predict.
Patriots are the winners? Is that what you're saying?
That pretty much does it, doesn't it?
We are two Patriots homers. That is certainly true, Matt. Let's talk, though, about the other teams. Where are we looking at the divisional round playoffs? You've got Seattle at Atlanta. Who you got?
I'm taking Seattle.
I'm taking the Seahawks as well. Houston, after watching, who did Houston play that was also terrible? Oakland?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oakland's
man.
On like their third string quarterback.
No,
he hadn't started a game.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. Oakland was it's a terrible story for Oakland fans for sure. I just after watching that game, I thought there aren't, and I'm talking about the Texans more than I'm talking about Oakland because obviously they were on their third string quarterback. They can't find a better quarterback than Brock Osweiler.
Apparently not. They've struggled with quarter. They've always struggled. They can't figure it out.
I can't believe
like the Browns.
I can't believe somebody made the Matt Castle mistake. Right? Like, oh look, this guy looked okay while he was playing for a team that was really good and had a great defense. No, guys, no. You don't throw a bunch of money at that guy. You know, you just don't. Matt, on the other side. On the Sunday games, we've got Pittsburgh at Kansas City. I'm taking the Chiefs. How about you?
Oh, I'm taking the Steelers.
You hate Alex Smith with a deep, burning passion.
Yep.
All right. Fair enough. Then the late afternoon game is the Green Bay Packers at the Dallas Cowboys. Matt, who you got in that one?
I'm taking the Packers. Go, Pack, go.
I'm going to take Dallas. I do think that... whoever wins that Seattle-Atlanta game upsets Dallas the next week, though. I do not think they'll be in the Super Bowl. Matt, we're both picking the Patriots to win this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And you know, I just don't think there's, on the AFC side, I'm just not scared of Pittsburgh or Kansas City.
No, I don't even feel like this is a homer pick for me. I think I can legitimately, unemotionally say that I believe the Patriots are the best team in there.
Now, I think they will play a good team in the Super Bowl who could beat them, whether that's Dallas, Green Bay, Seattle, or Atlanta. I mean, Green Bay is hot as all get out, and Aaron Rodgers, it looks phenomenal.
He's a magician. He's a magician.
He hasn't thrown an interception since, like, I was about to say since the Obama administration, but I guess that's still going.
He hasn't thrown an interception since the Lions won a playoff game. You see what I did there?
Yeah, I did. That was good.
No, but seriously, the man practices the dark arts. I mean, you don't mess with Aaron Rodgers. He's very good.
And Seattle, they're one of those teams that I just don't want to play just because they've got enough things on both sides of the ball to hurt you. And Atlanta's offense, I just feel like if New England and them got in a shootout in the Super Bowl, it's anybody's game, right? And I think that could happen because Atlanta's offense is that good. Anyway, Matt, let's move on from the NFL and let's talk about last week we had a wonderful show about Lavelle Edwards. Nothing new to talk about there, but we did. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, go back and listen. We had a great interview with Dick Harmon, and then you and I spent a lot of time talking about Lavelle's legacy, some of his best games. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that podcast, stop this one and go listen. Then come back. Matt, we don't really have any football, BYU football news, so let's move on to hoops. Okay? So, lost to St. Mary's, went over Pacific. Before we get to some tweet bag questions, Matt, did this week change anything for you on how you view the men's basketball team going forward? Was this a plus week, a minus week, or a nope, still looks the same to me as when we talked a week ago?
I feel like this, and I don't mean to, you know, steal a phrase here, but this team is who we thought they were.
I mean, completely agree.
That's what we're learning, is that this is exactly what we thought we had at the beginning of the season, and it's not awful, you know, but this is where we thought we were.
It doesn't change my opinion. I have a hard time picturing how we beat St. Mary's. Their offense is so good, and I think we threw a really good defensive effort against them, and it's still lost. So, of course, it's one night, right, and things can change. If BYU is at home and hitting a bunch of three-pointers, the whole thing can change for certain. And then, Matt, they bounce back, and I like that. And absolutely pounded Pacific. So that's great, right?
Yeah, that's great. And maybe it took them a little bit to get started.
Well, not so fast, says Andre Hutchins with our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
So this comes off of Facebook, and you can follow us on, or like us, I guess is the correct phrase, on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout, on Twitter at @BYU_riseshout, and you can use the old-fashioned email, Matt, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com, one word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Matt, Andre says this, even though the game against Pacific resulted in a blowout victory, the team seemed out of sorts for most of the game, from what I could see. Is the team still trying to find its rhythm? Are personnel losses causing depth issues? Is the starting rotation still in question? Boy, Andre, you've got a lot of questions. And then he finishes with, am I just trying to make something up that isn't there? Hashtag, what 140 character restriction? He obviously left Twitter to come rant a little bit on our Facebook page, Matt. Do you think he's making something of nothing, or do you think Andre's got a little bit of a legitimate point here about that game against Pacific?
I think you look at the game against Pacific, the team's bouncing back from a tough loss. Like you said, I mean, the defensive effort was decent, right? But I think you're deflated after you put up that effort and still get that outcome on the road against St. Mary's. And the scheduling thing is a little bit weird, and I think they're getting used to that, where you play a game on the road, then you're coming back to play a game at home a couple days later over the weekend, right?
So yeah, it's weird.
It's a little bit weird. Rose has talked a little bit about it. I think it's impacted the team some. I think that those are really the main factors into what you saw early in the Pacific game. I don't think it's symptomatic of some larger problem with the team. So I think that kind of explains that. So is that a version of the team trying to find its rhythm? Maybe. Are personnel losses causing depth issues? Is the starting rotation still in question? By the way, this I would read this like a commercial, right? Like a commercial for a movie. Are personnel losses causing depth issues? Is the starting rotation still in question? That's how I would have read that.
No, but anyway, thank you. That's good.
So very dramatic. But listen, guys, I mean, go back over the past several years. What do we always say about the rotation at this point in the season with a Dave Rose coach team?
He hasn't figured it out yet.
He's still working it out.
Yep.
And he's going to be working it out, I don't know,
another couple weeks, and then he'll
lock it. Yeah, I was going to say until the end of the month.
Yeah.
You get to that Gonzaga game, we're going to know what the chemistry is supposed to look
like. And the flavor of the week is Elijah Bryant, right? Yep. Which we'll get to a Twitter question here. Matt, I'm not concerned about the Pacific game at all. We beat them by 30 points. We did exactly what we were supposed to. Yeah, there were some rough things around the edges, but I'm not going to get worked up about any of those things because I don't. I think what you talked about explains almost all of them, and we won by almost 30 points. So Andre, don't worry.
So the answer to your last question is yeah, probably.
Yes, but to answer to his other questions, are there some issues here? Yes, absolutely. But we knew that coming into the game. I don't think that game exposed any. Matt, Gary Payne has some thoughts. Actually, he wants our thoughts. He says, thoughts on the 1-3-1-D. Did we stay for it too long in the St. Mary's game? Their superior passing seemed to pick us apart when we went with it. Matt, I have gone on record saying I don't think this team has the personnel to play the 1-3-1. I think the St. Mary's game showed that for sure.
So my question is this. If it's not the 1-3-1, what should they do different? I don't know the answer to that because I don't know what they – I don't know what would work.
The 2-3 matchup zone that they sometimes run, but then they have rebounding problems out of that.
Right. So is there something different they can do that they can execute well enough for it to be the difference? That's the question. It's not whether or not the 1-3-1-D, did we stay for it too long and does it work? We all know the answer to that. Yeah. They stayed for it too long and it didn't work.
Right.
But I don't know what the alternative is that this team can execute at the level they need to win this game.
The biggest frustration, Matt, for me with this team is defensive play. That to me is what is killing this team, is their inability against quality opponents to be able to shut down an offense that's good. Now, they've had good defensive games. against mediocre offensive teams. But when they've played really good offensive teams, the defense struggles. Now, I had felt pretty good about the defense because they looked good against that string of Idaho State, Cal State, Bakersfield, and Santa Clara, right? Yep. And then they didn't look great against Loyola Marymount. And then, of course, St. Mary's was not good. I don't think we have, outside of Mika, I don't know that we have a plus another single plus defender on the roster. I don't know if we have one, which that is kind of scary, right? Like, that's not a phrase you want to say.
Yeah, no.
You know, I thought Rose would be that on the perimeter. I thought Emery would get better defensively. You know, last year he wasn't great. I mean, he gets some steals, but he gets beat a lot. Now, that being said, Emery's been, I think, has been better, just not as good as I thought. And then, you know, maybe Childs is another plus defender, but on the perimeter, we really struggle.
And that might not get better.
It might not get better. Yes, that is a fair point. It might not get any better this season. Well, what are you gonna do?
Is that like a little bit of a downer?
Yeah, that is kind of a downer. Let's go up. Let's talk up. Okay, so Johnny Ashton on Facebook asks us this question, Matt. He'll have another question, I believe, later in the show. Nope, we skipped his question was earlier. Sorry, Johnny. Should Elijah Bryant replace LJ Rose in the starting lineup? Matt, would you make that change?
I'm going to go with the Dave Rose approach, and maybe for now.
And maybe for now. That's a very Dave Rose thing to do.
We still have a couple weeks before we're done there.
Statistically, you know? Bryant has outplayed Rose. Okay? Now, it's a little of an unfair comparison. You're talking about a guy that has played in 7 games versus a guy that's played in all 17. Right?
And you got to look at who the teams are.
Yep. You got to look at who...
You know, it's the Jay Keeps effect.
Yep. You got to look at all those things. But I would say, as of now, I don't really care who starts. I'm not a big, like, starting is good and makes people feel warm and fuzzy inside. In the end, it's who ends the game. And right now, Bryant's turnover percentage is higher than I would like. But the thing is, Rose's is actually higher. So I'm at the end of the game, it's probably Bryant. On the court, it probably is Brian on the court at the end of the game for me.
Yeah,
as of right now. Now things can change, but his ability to shoot 3-pointers at a better clip than Rose also really helps open things up for Mika. Because if you've got Emery, Hawes, and Bryant on the perimeter, there's no obvious. Well, we're just going to double off of this guy, right? Rose can't feed Mika in the post because whoever he's guarding him automatically doubles down, right? So that is a problem for sure. Matt, coming up, of course, they've got a couple of games here this weekend, but going forward, what are you looking for that will change your opinion about this team, that will make you think maybe they are not who we thought they were? I don't know if I said that right.
They've improved perimeter defense.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the things that we've talked about over the past couple weeks, I think are things that can get better, and I think we've seen some flashes of that. You know, and I think this last, you know, talking about Elijah Bryant versus LJ Rose, like, we were not having this conversation the first couple weeks of the season. Everybody loved LJ Rose the first couple weeks of the season.
Yep. You were the president of his fan club, I think.
I was the president of his fan club, as a matter of fact. And so, but that he's dropped off a little bit, and Elijah's now available, and so and performing, and so everybody's, you know, jumping on that train. But I think like that, most of the things that we've talked about are things that can probably be fixed. You know, is there something other than the 131D that Rose can figure out that might work? Yeah, maybe. But the one thing that I don't see, I don't see any flash of or any light at the end of the tunnel for, is the perimeter defense.
Yeah, I'm
and with teams you. That can shoot from outside are going to be a problem for this team for the rest of the season and down the stretch. If they can figure out a way to better defend that, then that would change my opinion about the potential of this team and how far they can go.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is a, I think that would change my opinion greatly, and I'm with you. I don't know why that changes unless they figure out some system or approach that leverages the skill sets that they have. For me, the thing I need to see going forward is you look at that box score against St. Mary's, okay? One of the biggest games of the year for the Cougars, right? For sure. Mika, massive game, looked fantastic in his against Landale, 28-10, 12-17 shooting, 4 or 5 free throws, had a block, looked fantastic. Matt, do you remember who our second leading scorer was?
Well, see, now I'd have to Google it.
But Elijah Bryant, 11 points on 4 of 12 shooting, not exactly a banner night, right? He did add a rebound, a couple of rebounds. Nick Emery, 9 points, 2 boards, 2 assists, and 5 steals, 3 of 8 shooting. TJ Hawes, 7 points, 3 boards, 1 assist, 3 of 10 shooting. Combined, Emery and Hawes were 6 of 18 for 16 points and 3 assists between them.
Yeah.
These two have to play better offensively in the big games. They can't just light up Pacific and LMU. They have to have big games against the best opponents. And, that to me was the difference. St. Mary's was going to score 81 points against us. I was not anticipating holding them under 80. We needed to score 82, right?
Right.
That was the formula to win, was a better offensive performance. Yes, a better defensive performance would be fantastic, but I see a lot of unrealized offensive potential with this team. The defense probably just is what it is. The defense just, where maybe there's some better combinations, but Emery and Hawes have to show up, and right now Emery is not even playing as well as he did last year. So, anywho, Matt, Eric Mika, you might have heard of this young fellow.
Who hasn't?
He
one of the best in the biz.
One of the best in the biz. And literally, that's, we're not being homers. That is actually just true. He is one of the best in the business. So as we talk about Mika, he is on a freaking tear. And quite frankly, I don't know that it's precedented in BYU history, only because this is the year after his mission. Right? I mean, he had a good freshman year. Very good year. But so far
he must have served one of those missions to Gold's Gym that Kalani Sitake was talking about.
That's right. Yeah. Do we need to talk about that? We'll talk about that after we end that one men's basketball. So far this year, Matt, the lowest points he has scored is 13. That happened twice, in the loss to Valparaiso and in a lopsided win against Cal State Bakersfield, when he didn't even play that many minutes. He has scored in double digits in every single game. Kind of remarkable when you think about it, right?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay, so he has obviously had some big rebounding games, none quite as impressive as the one against Princeton to start the year when he grabbed 18 boards. But Matt, in his last 6 games, he's had double-digit rebounds 5 times, and the one time he didn't was against Santa Clara, which, again, he didn't play as many minutes, and had 9 rebounds in that game. Matt, we are looking at a player over these last 6 games that that is playing at a level, or maybe you even say the last 8 or 9, playing at a level that very few players have ever played at BYU. And some of it against, I mean, this St. Mary's, he was playing a top, 15, 20 team. I just didn't expect him to be this good this year. Like, I expected him to be better than his mission, but I thought he's having the year this year like I thought he would have next year.
Right. He's a year early.
He's a year early. So what does that mean for next year? Is this his ceiling? Is there more? I mean, he's the sixth best player in the country, according to player efficiency rating. If you do some of the other, advanced stats, he's in the top 10 in most of those ratings. Is he top 5 next year? Is he one of the best 2 or 3 players in college basketball? Is that the adjusted ceiling? I thought top 10 was more than optimistic about his ceiling. So what do you say? Top 2 or 3 next year?
Top 5?
Is he going to be, we're early. It's halfway, a little bit over halfway through his sophomore year.
A little early.
Is projecting if he just played for this year and next, as well as he's playing right now, is he one of the best 5 players in BYU basketball history?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, he is. Is that crazy? Like, if you had asked me at the beginning of the season, will he be one of the top 5 players in BYU history, I would have said no. I would have said he'll get close. Top 10, yes. If you would have told me, you'll take Brandon Davies at the top of his game or Eric Mika right now, who are you taking?
Taking Mika.
I'm taking Mika too. Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy when you think about it like that. That's really crazy.
Like, if you were just saying, okay, I need to win a game right now. I mean, his advanced stats are better than Davies were as a senior. Davies isn't necessarily the best big man we've ever had, but he's pretty darn close. And we talked about some of those great big men during the offseason. But it's just amazing to me. He's having a terrific year. And Matt, I feel like a little bit like it's being wasted. Like, he has this great game against St. Mary's, and it doesn't even matter. We're not really even in the game towards the end.
Right.
The announcers are just talking about how wonderful he is, and it's like everybody else on the team decided to not play that great that night. And that's not fair, because they were all trying. I didn't see a lack of effort, but it's just like they just couldn't. St. Mary's is good.
St. Mary's is really good. So is Gonzaga.
St. Mary's is. Gonzaga might win this whole thing, right? Like, if they need to play, if they can beat St. Mary's twice, I'm going to start thinking they're going to make a run in the tournament. Because St. Mary's is a good team. If they end up beating them twice or maybe 3 times, they might make a run, Matt.
They could be a Final Four team.
Yeah, they could be a Final Four team. I do have to bag on the announcers a little bit in St. Mary's when they were saying that it's in doubt whether the WCC is getting 2 teams into the tournament. That's just ridiculous. Gonzaga right now is projected to be a 1 or 2 seed, and most projection systems have St. Mary's as a 6.
Yeah, there's really no question those two teams will go.
Unless the wheels come off for St. Mary's in conference play, they're in the tournament. The real question isn't whether they're a 2 bid league, it's whether they're a 3 bid league, right? It's whether BYU gets in, not whether St. Mary's gets in. They're a 2 bid team, a 2 bid league this year. There's no doubt about it. So Matt, let's talk about you texted me about this. So missions, this is a new thing. I've never heard this, but missions may give BYU an unfair advantage in football. Have you heard this before?
What?
This is the first time I've heard it. But Matt, what does Kalani Sitake say about that?
Oh, I thought his response was perfect. The only way his response could have been better is if he would have looked across the table and said to that coach, if it's such a good idea, why aren't you doing it?
Matt, this conversation has been happening for 30 years, at least.
Okay. It's asinine.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely crazy that people are still saying that. How is this still being discussed? Like, if it was an advantage, Nick Saban would be putting all his guys on airplanes, flying them to do Peace Corps volunteering for a year or two in Africa and coming back, right? Like, if this was any kind of advantage at all, the big programs would be using it, right?
And we would be winning a lot more games.
Yes, yes. You know,
the thing that bugs me about it is, guys, if you're so mad about this, like, why shouldn't we be, if this is a real thing, shouldn't we be in, like, the top 10 all the time? Oh, except if you go back in time, let's list some really good BYU football players that didn't go on missions, right? Like, explain that.
Yes.
Like, the whole thing is just, the whole conversation around this is just so tired.
So if you take our top 20 position players all time, I bet you half of them or more did not serve missions. Right? Who's the first really successful?
Let's straw man that real quick, right? So Jim McMahon.
Jim McMahon did not serve a mission. Steve Young. Okay.
Yep, there we go.
Ty Detmer.
Oh, hey-o.
Steve Sarkisian.
Hello.
I'll just stick with the quarterbacks here for a second.
I was going to throw in Jamal Williams.
Robbie Bosco.
Oh, here we go.
Let's see. Who are the only, like, all-time great quarterbacks at BYU who have served mission? It's Hall and Beck, right?
Yep.
And that's recent. Obviously, both the quarterbacks that were on the team last year served missions. You can look at a lot of the greatest defensive players. Kyle Van Noy. Jason Buck. You know, it's just crazy, and I can't believe the conversation still happens. I just can't believe it. I can't, like, it's just like, educate yourself a little bit.
The problem is somebody who's not super familiar with the program hears that the first time.
Oh my gosh, they have a bunch of linemen that are 24.
Oh my gosh, these are full-grown men.
Oh, if I hear that one more time.
Do you see pictures of that Alabama running back when he was in 10th grade?
Yeah.
That's a full-grown man right there.
Did you just watch that game of Clemson versus Alabama? And how about the freshman? How about Hurts? He needs
to go on a mission. Imagine how much better he'll be after riding a bike in a third world country for 2 years.
Yeah. And eating terrible, terrible food that you have to eat because you're afraid you're going to offend somebody, but it's probably going to give you some type of a tapeworm.
I can't wait till he loses 40 pounds.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's crazy to me. And that's one of the things that, to go back to Mika, it's the typical thing after your mission is to have a year that is rough around the edges, right?
Yes.
You're playing your way back into shape. For 2 years, even if you played a few pickup games, just your rhythm is going to be off, right? And maybe you reclaim it somewhere mid-season as you get into it. Maybe you don't, because some guys have not. You know, that year after the mission is just, I don't want to say a lost year, but just they can't ever find the full potential. And that's true in basketball and football. You don't see guys step off the mission and typically light the world on fire. There are exceptions, though. Mika, Mangum. There are exceptions to that, but they're pretty rare. They're pretty rare.
I just loved his response. He's like, well, if that were true, Alabama would be doing it.
Yeah.
And then he ends with, hey, these are my guys.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's what you love about Satake, right?
Yeah,
and
he's the
because
man.
That's the way he approaches it. And he's not going to sit there and take any crap from any of these coaches.
Yeah. Well, clearly
he was really just there for the snacks.
Yeah, well, apparently the snacks were good. Matt, going back to basketball real quick, I jumped over a tweetback question that I wanted to hit on. Okay, so we have asked the Lone Peak 3. We're not a big fans of those names, but we have not, of that nickname, we have not come up with a better one. I still think the Zone Leaders is pretty good, but
oh my gosh!
I just think it's funny, and I love how much people would react. You know how great it would be to call them the zone leaders and
have Utah fans,
the Utah and Utah State fans, just be like, "Oh my gosh, can't believe you're doing that." I was a zone leader on my mission too. By the way, I have no idea if Haas or Mika were zone leaders on their mission. I don't know or care, but anyway, Lone Peak 3. So Tim Jacobson he emailed us this to us, Matt. Can we agree that LP3 should just be a romantic love combination? So he's
this is where the wheels start to come off for me. Right, but I'm gonna let you go ahead and finish. This is like that video where they were lip syncing the Chicago song. Yes. So go ahead. I'll let you finish with Tim's question.
So here. Like Brangelina or Tomcat. this is. I can't even get it out. So
I'm jumping up on the couch here.
So here's what Tim says. America. For pronunciation, he would go with the accent on the first or second syllable. First syllable sounds like hammerica. Or we can smash you with our hammerica. Or accent on the second syllable is patriotic. America. And then he says, America, God shed his grace on me. Preferably sung in a Ray Charles voice, he says, like at the end of Sandlot. Great, great reference, by the way, there, Tim. And if you choose this option, we will play that song as the ending music to the podcast. Matt, I think I already know you are not going to be for us adopting Hamarica as their name.
I've been shaking my head the entire time you've been reading this, so no.
I love Tim's suggestion.
So
I
much
love the
no.
Creativity.
So much no.
But
oh
no,
my
we're
gosh.
Not. We're not going to do it. You can go ahead and carry that flag, Tim.
I would go with the zone leaders way before I'd go with this, just for the troll factor. This one doesn't even provide you with that. Maybe
it absolutely does.
Maybe if you work in the hammer option, I think maybe you've got something there, right? But, no, can't do it. I'm just not there.
All right. And
Tim. But kudos on the creativity though.
Yeah.
At least I like that he's thinking about it.
We haven't figured it out. And here we are, more than halfway through their first season.
We don't have the starting lineup isn't sorted out yet. Why should this be solved? Yeah. Like we've got time everybody.
We do have time. We have plenty of time. He also asks if there are any more stories about Dawn, no, that's it.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing about Dawn, which is part of his charm, is there are no more stories.
Yeah, that was it. That all we
have exhausted the entire arsenal.
Yeah, that's all he got.
But a mission to the Klingons wasn't interesting enough for Tim Jacobson. I mean, what more do you want, man?
Maybe he wants some details. Maybe he wants to know if did him and Lieutenant Worf ever get in a fight? Did he and Elder Worf ever fight?
I think we all know the answer to that because Dawn is still alive.
Yeah. Fair enough. So Matt, let's talk about Rogue One here in the last few minutes. We put this off for a few weeks so that people could have a chance to see it. If you haven't seen it, you probably don't care and you're probably turning off the podcast right now. So we are going to give big fat spoiler warnings for the next few minutes as we close this podcast. So if you have not seen Rogue One and you are planning on seeing it and don't want to know anything about it, turn the podcast off now. Have I given them enough time? You think I've given
them maybe
time?
Somebody's like across the room and they got to walk over and turn it off.
Or they're in their car and they're not quite sure how to do it without taking their eyes off the road. We want you to
Or they've got a crying child in the car. They're trying to sort that out before they can reach the controls.
Just let them cry. They're kids.
Well, maybe it's their first child. Maybe it's their first
child. Gotcha.
I don't even notice it anymore.
I don't even hear
children
it.
Cry. I can't wait till my wife listens to it.
And my wife has started listening to it, by the way. And they listen to it. The kids request it in the car. No joke. They love the sound of my voice. I'm awesome. I don't believe that is actually true. I think I just made that up. So, Matt, best scene in Rogue One. Do you have a choice?
Best scene in Rogue One.
Best scene in Rogue One. Do you need time to think about this?
Yeah, let me think about that. You go first.
So before, and we're still giving people spoiler time, we had a question from, let's see here, from Jeremy Ashton asking us to rank all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. We are going to do that. We're going to do that in the off season, though, or later in the year when we don't have something else to talk about. All right. So Jeremy, hold tight. That's coming. Matt, my favorite scene in Rogue One is actually fairly early on in the movie, when they are. It's kind of the opening scene where he's a spy and he's talking to the guy, and then the guy gives him the information and he's scared, and then he shoots him. And the reason I say that is because that is the scene in which the scene before that, where you learn a little bit about her childhood, seemed very Star Wars, right? That scene is like, oh, this is not your dad's Star Wars movie. Like, he's one of the good guys and he just shot somebody.
Well, and at that point you're like, well, is he a good guy? Yeah, who is this guy?
Yeah, you What's don't really deal? Know. You've seen him on the movie poster, but you don't really know. Because that sets up my other favorite scene, which is at the end when it's the scene that in most movies can be cheesy and you just kind of don't like, which is the "we're with you" speech.
Yes.
When they all come out to join him. But it works so much better when you've seen one of the things he did, not to mention almost killing her dad too, but you've seen, this is a guy that has done some really shady things in the name of trying to beat the Empire. And it bothers him. There's a part of him that's bothered by that. And he does not want this rebellion to go away because some politicians are scared. And he wants it to mean something. He doesn't want that moral sacrifice he's made to mean nothing. Those two scenes in combination to me just give a depth that most action summer Christmas time movies don't have. So that's it. Matt, what about you?
I'd say there's a, I don't know where exactly to define this moment, but and before I go any further, like, major spoiler coming here. Okay. Huge. So
massive. Turn
okay,
it off.
Massive spoiler. Turn here, it off. Okay, everybody. So when that team realizes that none of them are going to get out of there alive, and they don't even flinch. Like, she doesn't even flinch. And this is another scene I feel like could be done, could turn out really cheesy, but I found very compelling, was at the very end with the two of them kneeling on the beach, just, you know, knowing that it's their final seconds.
Yeah, it could be a terrible scene. But
yeah,
it wasn't.
Could be really cheesy and stupid or whatever. But the way they pulled you in and made you care about the characters, and you know, with everything with their dad and all this, you know, for me, those were parts that really pulled me in.
So as most Star Wars fans know, Harrison Ford wanted them to kill Han Solo in Empire Strikes Back. And you could make an argument that would have made for one heck of an ending, The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But obviously they didn't. And a lot of folks believe that the reason they didn't was merchandising, right? You kill off Han Solo, there's no more Han Solo figures, right? And he's one of the main characters and all that jazz. This was bold in that, and if I read an article with the director and some other folks, they originally just didn't think Disney and Lucasfilm would let them do this, right? Like she's signed for two movies. I don't know how she stars in another one. You know, so it was fascinating, but it also made sense, right? Like, I watched Rogue One and then watched A New Hope the next day.
Right.
It gives New Hope a massive amount of weight.
Especially if you go back and watch A New Hope, like, you feel some weight.
Oh yeah.
When they talk about it took, you know, they say in that movie, well, it really, you know, we lost people trying to get this information. Like, this is, and there was already weight to that. And that's part of what really pulled me into this is the way that it tied what for years was just almost a passing comment.
Yes.
In this classically popular movie, and gave you, you know, and it took these couple of sentences, almost kind of a dramatic footnote from episode four, and breathed life into it, unlike anything you would have really expected. You know, I mean, it just insane when you think about the stuff you just described about the development of characters and, you know, and the moral sacrifices that were made to even get to that point and all of that. I mean, it totally changes the way you think about that first movie.
Oh, it is. It was. It's
that's
a great,
where the power is, I feel like, yeah, in a movie like Rogue One.
It's fantastic. It, unlike the prequels, it adds weight to the next movie, right?
And you see on the end with Darth Vader, you're like, man, that guy is a monster.
Oh my gosh, that scene,
he is just pure
that
evil.
Scene was amazing. As he's just throwing guys around, and you know, you see how close, and here I'm going to end my thoughts, and I'll give you a chance to give your closing thoughts. One of the things that I have a pet peeve, Matt, something that bothers me. I know that sounds strange to you because nothing bothers me, right?
No, you're very laid back.
Very laid back. We've gotten to the point in geek culture where every movie gets picked apart and it's got plot holes. Every movie has plot holes, right? And there's the whole, I saw one of these where it's the 10 biggest plot holes in Rogue One. So I open it up, okay? Open up. I'm just curious, what did they see as plot holes? And one of their plot holes was, well, if Princess Leia's ship blasted their way out of that battle, and then she says, well, we are on a diplomatic mission, right? It doesn't connect to the two movies, okay? So this is what I have to say, specifically and then overall. Specifically, there are a bunch of ships, and if you saw this, they showed a few in the movie, that look exactly like hers, okay? So this is a common ship, so, you know, didn't have to be hers that blasted out. The second part is this. Just because you lack an imagination doesn't mean there's a plot hole. Right? Just because you can't come up with a scenario that means that, like, people have for years have said, well, the biggest plot hole in Star Wars New Hope is no one would build something with such an obvious weakness. By the way, it wasn't an obvious weakness. It's a tiny little hole in a cave on this massive battle station, right? That you have to hit exactly right or it doesn't work, right? Like, right. And now we have the whole backstory, which of course didn't exist then. I get it. They've made it up since then.
But I love that they did that.
Oh, me too. And plus, did the Titanic, pick a big thing that's been built that was supposed to be impenetrable that was penetrable, right? Like, this is not, like, those aren't plot holes, guys. Those are just, you lack an imagination. I love this movie. I think we rated them last week. I think it's one of the best Star Wars movies. It makes me very, I'm now cautiously optimistic about the Han Solo movie. I'm still very worried about that one. But and any future movies they do, I think with The Force Awakens and Rogue One, Disney and Lucasfilm know what they're doing. And I can't wait to see more of it, Matt. How about you? Any closing thoughts on Rogue One?
So I'll say this, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit. I am a casual Star Wars fan.
Not anymore,
right? I've seen the movies. I've enjoyed the movies. I can't quote them all. I don't dwell on, you know, perceived plot holes or, you know, I haven't named any of my children Yoda or C-3PO. You know, and I haven't done any of those things. But and part of that is people who are into these movies have allowed themselves to become immersed in this universe and in this story. And you know, I even sat and watched all six of the movies with my son several weeks ago. And you know, we've done all this stuff. And before Rogue One, I never got pulled into the universe the way that I was after seeing that movie. And I think what Rogue One did for me was it really opened up the breadth, you know, of what could be going on here with this story. You know, and when you think about Rogue One is really based off of, you know, this little fact out of episode four. And there's this whole incredible story that leads up to this little conversation in the one movie. And it kind of opens up your imagination to what else is out there. You know, what else is out there that's going on that you can see and learn about? And the other reason I brought up that Darth Vader scene is that's another one that's been really interesting to me. And that's actually connected to the book that I've started reading first, is this development of how did Darth Vader get there? I mean, how did he become so evil, right? And because I'd never in any other film, like, do you, I mean, maybe in the prequels, you know, when he kills all those kids.
Like, he's right. Not in the suit. He's not,
right.
You know,
it's not the same.
It's not the same. Like, we've never seen Vader go all out like that in a movie while in costume. It was, and when he was choking the director guy, like, you're just like, okay, now we get why everybody was scared of him. Like, on the Imperial side. Like, it was like, oh, this is how he treated people, you know?
They were terrified because he just killed people.
He just killed people. He's just like, oh, you pissed me off, you're dead.
And you'd seen that, you saw that a little bit in some of the other movies.
Oh, yeah, you saw it in Empire. He's like, you're promoted, Admiral.
But the way it opened... The way it opened up this whole other world and still developed some of the main characters at the same time was extremely compelling to me, and it's pulled me in. I think I tweeted out at one point after seeing Rogue One that it was my favorite of all the Star Wars films, and I've gone back to thinking about that comment since we rated them all, and you know, I might, you know, on a given day, if you ask me to rate them, tell you that I liked it the best.
Yeah, it's certainly worthy of consideration. There's no doubt, right?
Because it pulled me in unlike any of the other films did. And the other thing I'll just say is this: I like war movies, and that's really what this was. Oh, it was a war movie. That's what it was.
One of the great things about any universe, if you want to expand it, you know, like Marvel is doing, like Star Wars is doing, like DC is trying and failing to do, is you can tell in your universe a bunch of different kind of stories. Ant-Man is a heist movie, right? The first Captain America is a war movie, right? The Captain America Winter Soldier is kind of like a spy thriller movie, right? Like, it doesn't have to be the same plot dressed with different characters. Here they tell a war story in the Star Wars universe, and they told a good war story. Is it the best war movie ever? Probably not. But by combining those things together, you get something new and fresh and interesting that we haven't seen before. And there were books in the old extended universe that went kind of this road as far as like being more war and soldier-like.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were as good as this movie was, though. And I've read... not of the new extended universe stuff, but of that old extended universe, I read almost all of them. There wasn't any of them that were war focused that were as good as this. So I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Well, that's all the time we got, guys, this week. We will be back next week for our Jamal Williams episode. We'll, of course, be talking men's hoops as well. Again, if you like this podcast, do a few things for us. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Every time you see our podcast poke up on your Twitter feed or your Facebook feed, like us, retweet us, love us, whatever the correct verb is, and we would appreciate it. Thank you all for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!
I thought you were going to say go Rogue One or go Jen Erso or something.
No, you can't break from the bread and butter.